Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. We're doing the baseball podcast again tonight, and with me once again is Dave Brown, national MLB writer for Bally Sports. Dave, how are you doing?
Hi, Andy. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me back. It's amazing to be back. I love being asked back.
Well, I'm glad you said yes. Oh, and Kyle Reichert, who is often also on this podcast, was going to be on tonight. You didn't know that. I didn't even tell you that. He was going to do it, and then young Kyle bailed again. Kyle has an actual social life.
All right.
And at the last minute, he must have got a hot date, and he said
that he would not
be able to be on. So for those of you who are worried that I've left poor Kyle, kicked him off the pod, that is not the case. But I don't know how often he'll slum it to be on with me. But still.
Well, good for him for getting out.
So last week's podcast, we hit on a couple of topics that actually bore fruit during the week. The first of which was we were talking about whether or not, actually, I believe as we were podcasting, the electric personality of Tom Ricketts was, actually, I thought, this is perfect Ricketts. I thought that Jed and Tom had taken Seiya Suzuki and his agent, and I assume a translator, out to dinner. No. They met at Sloan Park. Tom's like, would you like some peanuts? It's $6. I don't know how many yen that is. But we talked about that, and we joked about how I'm sure that Tom, that's the guy you bring in when you really need to seal the deal, is Tom Ricketts. But it happened.
It did.
The Cubs actually signed him. And it was funny. It's one of those rare reported deals where the money kept going up. Usually the agent leaks it. And then the money is not as much somehow as they said. But it started off, I think, they thought it was 5 years, $70 million. Then they're like, no, it's 5 and 85 because of the $15 million posting fee. No. Turned out it was really 5 and 85 plus the $15 right. million dollar posting fee. So the Ricketts had to write a big... What is that? How many figures is that? 8?
I thought you were going to ask how many yen it is. I don't know.
I barely know how to convert dollars to cents, much less to foreign currencies. But that's genuinely exciting for Cubs fans to have someone who might actually be able to hit. We don't know this for sure. But he's a better chance than many of the other they're professional baseball players they are currently employing.
The scouting reports are good. They say he's the best one to come over since Shohei as far as hitting. So I have to go with that.
What do we think? What are the odds that he'll be the best Suzuki ever to come? Probably not. That's probably not going to happen.
Probably not. No, probably not. You know, if he's good as for hitting what Max Suzuki, we don't want that either. Never mind. Is there another Suzuki? I think there is, but I can't think of who it is. No.
It's funny because it becomes very easy to forget that Ichiro actually has a second name.
What is it?
Suzuki.
Oh, yes.
That's why I don't think Seiya can become. But see, that's it because Ichiro went with The Mariners, they still have good commercials, but they've always, for the longest time, they've had the best commercials. And they had the one where the guys are watching Ichiro take batting practice, and they're commenting on how he has his first name on his jersey. And I think Brett Boone is the one who's talking about it. And then they show the game, and it just says Brett. He's standing at second base with Brett on the back. Like, it's not working for you, Boone. Sorry. They also have a good one where it's a close-up of the catcher, and you could tell they have the radar gun, and it's going off at like 98, 96, or whatever. And then you expect as the camera pans back, you're going to see a pitcher. And so it's just Ichiro throwing in from right field. Just pretty funny. Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed. I don't know why I'd be disappointed, but I thought that Seiya would put his first name on his jersey. But he's got Suzuki. He's number 27. Because as he said in the press conference, they asked him why he picked it. He said, "I love you, Mike Trout."
I love you, Mike Trout.
Which was very funny. So he seems to have an actual personality, which would be nice. He's going to play his first Cacti League game on Friday. He's been taking live batting practice ever since right after the press conference. And I forget what pitcher he is, but he drilled some pitcher with 112-mile-an-hour line drive. So I guess all that's promising. I did have one Twitter follower who basically said right-handed hitting Japanese players are all suck.
It sounds vaguely racist and sidist.
He's like, "Oh, the only good ones are the left-handed hitting ones because they need the platoon advantage." I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad we're already giving up on Seiya. He had a good run. He took batting practice for a week before Cub fans went, "Hell, he sucks."
You know, I guess if you're a fan of a certain team, it doesn't have to just be the Cubs, but you know, sort of a cynicism can take over, a fatalism, a whatever. But I mean, that is, I've never heard that, or maybe I have, and it's been a long time, but I've never heard that criticism of Japanese players at large.
I had never either. He had stats to back it up. I think it may be more.
So is he bad against right-handed Japanese pitchers?
I don't think he's, it does not seem that he was bad against righties, lefties, or other.
Yeah.
In the Japanese league. But we'll see. I mean, we don't know how it's going to translate. And Cub fans are not good at bracing themselves for disappointment. Well, actually, it's ironic. We are experienced at disappointment, but we are not very good at handling it. And he's two things that will work against him in the early going. He is adapting to a brand new league, and he's a high-priced free agent signing. And independently, those players tend to struggle for a little bit at the beginning. They put a lot of pressure on yourself because you want to justify to people that this is why you brought me over, this is why you paid me all the money. Those guys almost inevitably struggle. And then at some point, it kicks in and they just become what they're going to become. A great example of that was the last Japanese hitter that the Cubs got, which was Kosuke, who hit a 3-run homer in his first game against Bruce, tied it up, and then didn't get a hit for like another month. But was an all-star. So I can tell you that even though I can warn Cub fans that the Seiya you see in August and probably the first half of May is not the guy you're going to get long-term, it won't matter. The first time he's 0-for-4, it will be the end of, oh my God, they've done it again. They wasted all this money, and now we're really screwed. But he's going to play right field. Ross, that's about as much as Ross would commit to. And I thought that was good because that would get Jason Hayward out of the lineup, but no. All it has done is moved him over to a position in the field that he never really was that good at, but he really isn't anymore. He's not really a very, he doesn't have much range in right field anymore. And if you don't have range in right field, you certainly don't have range in center.
No, there's more range. Home run range.
I don't know if you've noticed this. He doesn't hit much.
I did notice.
I mean, he hits. I should restate that. He hits the ball a lot. He hits it rather slowly to the second baseman most of the time, which is not a recipe. One of the things I was hoping was that they're not going to deal with the shift this year. They're going to do it next year. Kind of hoping that they rule that no one can play halfway between the first and second base bags.
Yeah.
Jason Hayward would win the batting title if there's nobody there. Otherwise, it's not going to be good. Now, part of the reason I think he's playing center is Ian Happ can't throw right now. He had elbow surgery. But then they also have a 30-year-old phenom, Rafael Ortega, who was one of their three best hitters in the second half last year, which is as impressive as it is sad. Who, like Hayward, is a lefty batter. I don't remember if he's right-handed or not. I feel like he is.
Who? Ortega?
Yeah.
He's at least left-handed. I don't know if he's a switch hitter. I could look
that up. No, he's left-handed. I don't remember if he actually throws right-handed.
Oh.
I guess it doesn't really matter. He's a center fielder. So you can't platoon them. Because
right, unless they have weird platoon splits.
No, Hayward doesn't hit anybody, and Ortega hits right-handers and can't hit lefties at all. He needs a platoon partner, but it can't be Jason Hayward. That doesn't make any sense.
Is there a bigger differential or interval or whatever between, you know, in Hayward's case, being a pretty good guy and just not being an effective ball player anymore? And like, how, you know, emotionally, how do you, some people don't care. They boo or they hate or whatever, but I would have a hard time being mad at
him. He doesn't get, John Greenberg was on this very podcast a couple of weeks ago and we talked about Hayward. He doesn't get booed. He's never really gotten booed. Part of it was he had the luck of timing, which was he showed up in 2016, the greatest season of Cub fans' lives, sure, on this juggernaut of a team. And the fact that he struggled, nobody really cared. It was kind of like, God, he's going to hit, right? At some point, this guy's going to hit. Look, we're still winning all these games, and he's not even hitting yet. Wait till he hits.
Right.
And then the mythology of the locker room speech, the weight room speech during the rain delay has basically bought him goodwill forever. And so even people like me who would just as soon see the Cubs finally just let him go. Just eat the last 2 years of that contract and just let him go. Don't harbor any ill will at him. Like, nobody ever gets mad at Jason Hayward. You get disappointed that they paid him average $23 million a year or whatever, and he's never really hit. But he doesn't get booed. He doesn't. It's just kind of like, oh. We're not mad at you, Jason. We're just disappointed. That's kind of that's
very parental.
Yes, very parental feeling about it. It's like, oh, isn't it too bad that he was never any good? And I remember, not to toot my own horn, I was really against the signing at the time just because I felt like it was a very non-Theo thing to do. It was a Jim Hendry move, and that was, we'll pay a good player like he's a great player, and he'll become a great player. Well, that doesn't work. And right, it didn't work. And he was actually not even as good as the good player that I thought they were getting. And then there's the apocryphal tale of he had a good playoff series against the Cubs for the Cardinals in 2015, and he hit an opposite field home run the night everybody hit home runs. Game three? Yeah, game three. Everybody, the Cubs set a postseason record because everybody from 1 to 7 in the lineup hit a home run or whatever, and then Hayward hit a bomb opposite field, I think off Arrieta. And Theo and Jed were up in their little box going, oh, this guy's swing is perfect for Wrigley. This is gonna be great. And they went out and they outbid the Cardinals for him. The Cardinals made a big offer and he came to the Cubs sight unseen. He didn't even bother to make a visit. He's like, no, I was at the playoffs in 2015. Seems like a cool place to play. And the guys seem cool. I just signed with the Cubs. He basically said, they're younger, and I think they're going to be better longer than the Cardinals, so I'm going to go play for the Cubs. And then John Malley was the Cubs hitting coach at the time. And the day Hayward showed up for spring training, he immediately changed his swing, which is that's a good sign, I think. Give the guy the $184 million contract, and then the first day, like, oh, you're doing it all wrong. We're going to fix it wrong. Wait till we unlock this. And he just never hit. And I don't know that he was going to hit before Malley messed with his swing, but he certainly didn't hit afterwards. I think the big deal was, for a guy as big as he is, he never hit for the kind of power that everybody thought he was going to hit for. I mean, he's 6'5", and he's built, and they're like, all right, he's going to hit 40 homers. He had one good homer season for the Braves. That was about it. And I think that was what the Cubs were going to do, was, oh, wait till we make this tweak. Well, the tweak was, now he gets his hands in a weird position and hits the ball down into the dirt every time. It's like, oh, this is great. That was a lot more than about Jason Hayward than I planned to talk about. But the Cub outfield is a little, even with Saya in it, is a little. Clint Frazier is probably going to be the left fielder. he's looked good in spring training, and everybody's super, you know, people are starting to talk themselves into Clint Frazier because he certainly has talent, but it's never, he's never put any of it together for any prolonged period of time. I will just caution people that last spring, nobody in the Cactus League could get Jack Peterson out. And then everybody got Jack Peterson out when the season started, basically until the playoffs, even with the Braves. Jack saved all his hits for the second year in a row for October. So spring training, nothing matters other than
right.
who is everybody healthy the first day of the season? That's really all you're worried about when spring training right. ends. But Clint's going to get plenty of at-bats to try to win a spot.
Well, he needs some good luck because, you know, he hasn't performed, but he's also had some bad luck on the field. I think U.S. Cellular almost killed him.
Did he get caught in the Eloy net too?
it was lower. I think it was before the nets. yeah, really. It's no, he ran into, you know, they have that low fence in right field and ran into it at some point. And screwed up his knee, and that was a long time ago now.
Was that his ode to Mickey Mantle? Because, you know, he wanted...
Yeah, right.
Clint was famously disappointed that he couldn't wear 7
for the Yankees. Didn't he wear 77?
So he's 77. He's still 77 for the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
7 was available when they signed him. It's now Yan Gomes, but at the time he could have had it. And it's like, but you got to change that number. That's not a baseball number. That's not a good number. You're never going to hit with 70s. Nobody with 77 is ever going to hit.
Like a good left tackle number.
Yeah. Yeah, good old, I can't even think of a Bears 77.
Well, the Bears retired it, didn't they? Didn't they retire 77?
Probably. They retire. I don't remember this crap podcast Mike Donahue and I have talked about. The Bears are not allowed. The Bears have to get special permission to retire numbers now. The NFL told them, you need to stop. You've retired too many. You don't have enough numbers.
It's the guys from the meat era too. It's like, you know, all, you know, Joe Fortunato and,
well, they're very Yankee like in that they actually have they have one number that's retired for two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Of course the Cubs do too. But 7 is retired mostly for George McAfee, but then it was George Halas's number.
Right.
So it's retired for both of them.
Was he even a good player?
I don't think so. Yeah. He was also George Halas also a Yankee.
Yes.
So here's what I'm sure people who've listened to this podcast have heard this before, and you probably know this because you're a baseball savant. But, you know, the Cubs retired 31 for both Greg Maddux and Fergie Jenkins.
Sure.
At the time they retired, they were the only pitchers in baseball history who had done what? Do you know? Trivia time.
That's a great question. I don't remember.
They have since been joined by Pedro Martinez and Curt Schilling. At the time, they were the only pitchers in baseball history with 3,000 strikeouts and fewer than 1,000 walks.
Wow.
And they both were 31 for the Cubs. And then I should remember this off the top of my head, but do you know how many strikeouts walks Greg Maddux finished with?
I don't.
999. And he had to pitch like the last 52 innings of his final season. And he knew that he had 999 and did not want to walk the 1,000th. And he managed to pitch 52 innings at the end of his career and didn't walk anybody because he wanted to retire with less than 1,000 walks.
That's amazing.
Yes.
I don't know. That's sort of a little iffy as far as, because like you worry more about walking a guy. I mean, sometimes you...
He was pitching for the Padres, I think, right? Nothing mattered.
They weren't in it?
Nothing mattered. It didn't.
All right.
You know, if he was still with the Dodgers, he had traded himself from the Cubs to the Dodgers in a pennant race for Cesar Torres. He could have done a better job. I'm still mad. Greg's my all-time favorite player, and I'm still mad that he didn't get more for himself than Cesar Torres. Now, we joke about that.
Cesar Torres Jr. is somewhere right now.
Yeah. We've always joked about that, about Greg trading himself. There was a Cub player who literally did work out his own trade to get off the team. And that was Phil Nevin.
Wow.
He traded himself to the Twins. He and his agent worked out a trade, called Jim Hendry and said, you could trade me to the Twins for whoever. And Jim's like, okay. basically what he wanted to say was, you're a dick, and we want you out of the clubhouse. My wife and I had dinner with Len Casper once. Excuse me while I pick this name up.
Yeah.
And we were just talking to him, and my wife asked him, is there any player that you really don't like? Any player you've met who you just really don't like? And Len, one of the nicest people in the world,
of course,
looked at me and said, you can never write this. So I've never written it, but I have mentioned it on a podcast before. It was Phil Nevin. He said, I don't like Phil Nevin at all. And I mentioned it to others around the Cubs, like Mark Gonzalez and Bruce Miles. I was like, oh yeah, like no, he was awful with the Cubs. He was just a royal pain in the ass. That was pretty, you know, Len didn't know Dave Kingman, or he'd be on the list, but...
Well, Phil Nevin got himself traded. It's not quite as good as Dickie Knowles being traded for himself, or maybe it is better. I don't know, but it reminded me of that.
That would be a great conversation to have. Dickie, with the player for the player name later has finally been determined in your trade, and it's you. What?
They let him get away with that.
Who was the? We can't tell that. Pat Hughes loved to talk about this. We can't anymore. The relief pitcher from the Pirates who did bad things and had to go away.
Yeah.
He changed his name, and he had gotten traded. And Pat always liked to tell whichever Ron was with him at the time. He's literally the player to be named later. And that, well, I guess you could say the David Ortiz could also be a player named later. Right. It's David Arias.
David Arias.
ESPN Plus is doing this thing. It started with Peyton's Places, where Peyton Manning goes around. They're actually really entertaining. I watched a few and thought, this is good, they're going to suck, and like these are good. He goes around, and he goes to different football towns, and he either learns interesting stuff, or they do crazy stuff, or whatever. I think the best one is he went to the Astrodome, and Dan Pastorini was there, and Dan was credited with inventing, or at least being the first player to wear a flak jacket. And Peyton put the flak jacket on, and Dan Pastorini hit him with a baseball bat. So they have that, and then Eli did Eli's Places, where he went around to college towns and did stuff. And they have David Ortiz doing baseball ones. And he went to, in the most recent episode, he went to Wrigley and got to hang out for a day with Ryan Dempster, which I just loved. But he just happened to mention on his way in that he got his first career hit at Wrigley Field. And I would assume he got it as David Arias.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder where he got his first hit as David Ortiz. And does he have both balls? Here's my first David Arias hit. Here's my first David Ortiz hit.
Wow. You know how they have, in Baseball Reference, they have that, you know, on the day by day, was traded to Oakland on... Mm-hmm. Changed his name to David Ortiz.
So the other thing we talked about last week that has since happened was baseball really did listen to Joe Madden. And they changed the way the designated hitter rule works. And they did exactly the way you thought they were going to do it, which was they basically just said, all right, the thing we did for the All-Star game, we'll just do it all the time.
Right.
And the way I understand that it works is on the lineup card, he gets listed twice. You put him in the batting order where you want to hit him, and he gets the zero for the DH. And then he's listed as the pitcher. And if you take him out as the pitcher, he gets crossed off, but you don't have to take him out of the game unless you want to as a hitter. I wondered, does it work the other way? Say Joe, for whatever reason, just decides he wants to pinch hit for Shohei. But he wants to leave him in to pitch. I would think he can, right? It sounds like they simply like decoupled the DH from the pitcher.
I think that you're right. I don't know for a fact that you're right, but that sounds like you're right. Yes.
Yeah,
I would think so. I don't know if we're going to see that happen, but.
Oh, it's Joe. Of course we'll see it.
Well, right.
He'll do it just to do it.
Right.
I mean, this was a guy who entertained himself for an entire evening in Milwaukee by swapping Pedro Strop and Travis Wood in and out of left field.
Yes.
Which I know that's a thing that's been, he wasn't even the first. I remember the Cubs doing it with as Harry would call him, Lester Lacknaster.
Yes.
Les Lancaster got to shag a few flies out in
Les Mancaster. It's my friend Bob Hillier called him. And I remember the Mets doing it with Bob Ojeda and somebody. Davey Johnson switching out Bob Ojeda for lefty righty platoon business. And you can find that highlight somewhere on This Week in Baseball from 1986.
So they're calling it the Shohei rule, which is better than there's a scourge on the internet right now.
Not, ghost runner.
Yep, not even Ted Cruz. It's the ghost runner. It's like at some point the writers have to be doing it just to annoy us, right? Like they know. Some of them know what an actual ghost runner is, and that's not what this is.
Somebody bothered me on Twitter about it, and I think I remember last year some people calling it that, players or whatever, and that wasn't the popular phrase. But I do remember people calling it that. And then when the negotiations started and like the first story, I remember reading the first story. I'm like, oh, they're going to call it the ghost runner, huh? It's like some faction of play. I think it's, I don't know if it's writers. I think it was players in the negotiating committee called it that. And that's what, and then it just had wings and that's why we're calling it that now. What else did we call it? There must've been something better.
Well, I have a name for it. I don't remember if I talked about it last week or not. I want to name it after Rob Manfred because he was the commissioner in charge. I think it should be called the Manfred Man. I really want that to stick.
Oh, boy.
I guarantee you, I don't know. I don't know what Len Casper's doing these days. Because I don't believe the White Sox have a radio contract. Maybe they do. I guarantee I could get him to call it that.
No, they're on.
No, I know they are. That's my running joke is that Len just quit the business. Yeah. Because nobody goes from Cubs TV to White Sox Radio on purpose. So clearly he just quit the business and he's selling insurance with Larry Wisdom and Matt Nagy somewhere in Pennsylvania. That's
when did you have that dinner with him and did he talk about this?
No, this was years ago.
Okay. Is there something there? I mean, there obviously is something there and I don't know what it is, but.
Yes, I did ask. I did inquire. With him, and he basically politely said, "None of your business."
None of your business, right? As you would expect Len Casper to do.
It was shocking to people like us on the outside. It was not as shocking for people. Not that I think people were surprised that he left that soon, but basically it was because everything worked out. He got to stay in town. He's always claimed he wanted to do radio because, he grew up listening to Ernie Harwell and that's what he wanted. He wanted to be Ernie Harwell. And I think the biggest frustration that he had is that when you're the TV guy and your team goes to the playoffs, you don't get to do...
Stop working.
You don't get to do the most exciting games they're going to play all year. Now, the Cubs threw him a bone and he got to fill in. Pat Hughes goes to the bathroom for the entire fifth inning every game. And Len got to do the fifth in the playoffs. Yeah. I believe he may have called the David Ross homer. I think that happened in the fifth inning. Maybe Javi's homer in game seven. But then he had to just, he's just there for the rest of the game. So he doesn't get, for the guy who calls, 140 whatever Cub games every year, they win the pennant, they win the World Series, and you didn't get to call any of it. So I think that was part of it. You get to go radio, you get to do the cool stuff. But if he was happy with Marquee, he wouldn't have left. And my good friend Dave Kaplan, everyone assumed he was going to be the Cub, like the studio host for everything with the Cubs on Marquee. And he told me he never seriously considered it because he doesn't want to go work there. So there's something.
That is I'm preaching to the choir here, but that is one weird channel.
It's awful. I was all prepared to make fun of it just because it's what I do. And it's almost not fun to make fun of it because they're bad. Like if they were kind of good, then there's fun stuff to make fun of. I just feel like, and I'm going to do it, but I feel like because I'm not above piling on, but that's what I feel like I'm doing because it's like they can't get out of their own way. The one thing they're really good at, they still can't help but tinker with, is that their game broadcasts are good.
Yeah.
Jim Deshays is great, and Boog is a fine replacement for Len. It's as good as they possibly could have done to replace it.
Yes.
But they feel the need for whatever reason, to parachute in Ryan Dempster to be a third man in the booth for a while, which I've never liked him, but he doesn't add anything. You have him and DeShays. You don't need both. What is he adding that we're not already getting from Jim?
No.
So then they put Ryan Sandberg in the booth. And you can go an hour and not know Ryan's there.
Right.
And all of a sudden you hear him talking. Like, what, Sandberg is there? Has he been there the whole time? It's was like his smiling. Mic? Was he sitting on his microphone? Whoa, what happened?
Rhino's here.
Dynamite drop in, Rhino. Those broadcasting lessons are really paying off. I feel sorry for Ryan. Like he's a complete introvert. He just is. He was a great baseball player and he's a legendary Cub, and he's for an entire generation he was like everybody's favorite Cub. He wasn't mine. Sean Dunston and Greg Maddux were mine. But I had a complicated thing with Ryan. I knew he was great. I always admired how good he was and I just never really warmed to him. But he's completely ill-suited for this. One of my favorite things was the score had him as the post-game guy. Maybe it was even the last year they were still on GN. It might have been that. I bet it was. I bet it was the last year they were on GN. He did Cubs post-game for every game, and he had nothing to say.
Wow.
Nothing. And it's like, why are you making him do this?
Not a good idea.
No. Even with the hair plugs. You know, you think that, I mean, I thought maybe that would bring some personality, a lot of confidence. I don't know if you've seen Ryan, but he apparently Restore only gave him like half of them were free, and he didn't want to go in for the rest. So it's like you have hair plugs and a bald spot. It's like that's supposed to happen, Ryan.
Is that the Urlacher company?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. Apparently, Ian Happ is also on the team. That guy'll sell anything. Coffee.
Well,
podcasts.
He's an entrepreneur. I mean,
he's gonna get thrown out of a game for wearing an obvious shirt instead of his jersey onto the field. You're out of uniform. What? Who else will they bring in? Rick Sutcliffe.
Yeah.
Sut, it's funny. Sut is like super entertaining for like four innings. Like he's got stories, he's got jokes. And then that's like, okay, but Rick, you're there for 3 days. You blew all the good stuff in the first three innings of the first game.
Pace yourself.
Yes. And now what are we left with? So, yeah, they're just not. They've somehow made pre and post game must avoid TV instead of must see TV. It's been, it's just been super frustrating. DraftKings, a casino queen sportsbook, is officially live with mobile sports betting in Illinois, just in time to get in on all the college basketball mania. Right now, new customers can bet $5 on any tournament team to win their game and get $200 in free bets if they do. It's that simple. If they win, you win. Go down to Wrigley, sign up in front of the marquee. Go down to the UC, sign up in front of the Jordan statue. Go find a college campus and sign up on the quad. As long as you're in Illinois, you could sign up and bet from anywhere, right from the palm of your hand. Head to the DraftKings, the Casino Screen Sportsbook app now to check out all the great promotions and features, including same-game parlays. It's safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings, the Casino Queen Sportsbook app now. Use promo code POINTLESS. Bet $5 on any college basketball team to win and get $200 in free bets. If they win, you win with promo code POINTLESS this week at DraftKings, the Casino Queen Sportsbook. 21 and older, Illinois only. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-426-2537. So back to the actual topic we were on was the DH. Is there? Well, you had a good take, and I stole part of it.
Thanks.
About how it's basically a self-fulfilling prophecy, the need for the DH in both leagues, in that teams have basically just stopped trying to either develop basically they take people from a relatively young age. If you could pitch, and that's all you do. You know, you don't hit. You might not even play another position, and that's how you end up with pitchers who just stand there terrified. Because at some point they were the best hitter on their team, right? Like almost every big league pitcher at some point was just a stud. He played shortstop when he didn't pitch, and he hit .540 in high school, and he hit.
Yeah, they all looked like Shohei in high school,
right? And now you put him in the box, and they can't even get a bunt down because for the first 3 years they were in the minor leagues, they took batting practice like once a month,
right?
And that's like, oh yeah, by the way, you're gonna have to bat half the time. So, whoops.
And guys in the lower minor leagues do not, in that, I mean, obviously now they don't, but National League teams do not hit at all until you were in AA and AAA yep. and were playing another National League team in your minor league game.
Yep. Yeah, I worked a summer for the Beloit Snappers, and I asked, sometimes the pitchers would sit up in the press box. If they weren't supposed to do this, but if it was cold, whoever the next day starting pitcher would sneak into the press box to chart pitches because they didn't want to sit out there. And then they would sit and like yuck it up. And our favorite guy on that team was he pitched for the Orioles then later. And I'm some is Dennis Sarfati.
Yeah.
Was like very funny. And it basically turned into us just asking him a million questions about whatever. And one of the things we talked about was, this is a National League team. When are you ever going to take batting practice again? And he's like, I think if I get to AA, I'll actually take batting practice again. He's like, it's not going to do much for my hitting to have basically taken 4 years off before right. I ever pick up a bat again. He's like, they don't want to waste the time on us. It's like, he goes, if I asked to take batting practice, they wouldn't let me do it.
Right.
So.
But yeah. So do you think that was the right thing to do? The right philosophy? I know that the National League still had pitchers hit, but what they were on to that the pitcher, you know, has to spend so much energy and time becoming a pitcher that it's too much to ask the typical dude to do both.
No, I think it's a symptom of the over specific training that athletes do. You know, they don't, it's like a hyper-focused part of the, guys get discouraged even from playing another different sport. Like if they determine like, holy God, this guy can throw a baseball 95 miles an hour. They don't even want to play basketball anymore, much less anything else. Yeah. And I think at the minimum, until now, there was a 50% chance that if you made it to the bigs, you were going to have to bat.
Yeah.
And it's an entirely different set of muscles that you have to keep in shape to bat. Which is probably in the long run beneficial. Yes, I'm sure there are no team wants to lose a pitcher, especially in Class A, to a pulled oblique because he was taking batting practice before a game that he can't bat in. But at the same time, you need some, you know, how many games used to be won or lost by the fact that your starting pitcher was a complete non-factor at the plate? Right. He couldn't even help himself. You know, it became to the point where any pitcher who could, you know, John Lester was a good example of that. He was like the worst hitting pitcher ever until he wasn't. Like he was like 0 for his first 60 or whatever it was. You know, the Red Sox clearly didn't put any time into it. Basically, they throw him in the cage the series before he might have an interleague series to get a few bunts down. He came over to the Cubs and couldn't hit. And then all of a sudden, he was useful. Because he actually had to do it.
Yeah. He put in the work.
I think your point, right, was that we've changed this rule now so Shohei can do it, and we're never going to have another one because who the hell's ever going to find out if their pitchers can hit now?
Right. Well, I was, who knows about this source, but somebody was, I was saying similar things on Twitter about how major league teams and the minor leagues had, stopped having their pitchers hit, basically. And he's like, they even do it in high school. That, you know, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I don't know why he would lie, but he said, you know, they, even high school coaches will sort of separate those guys and make them pitchers more than baseball yeah. players. And, if that's true, you can sort of see how it started there and then got into the major leagues where guys lose their ability to hit and make it so you really do need a DH. It's, yeah. And like you said, into a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, I'm old, and we had a DH in Little League. Wow. Like, we didn't hardly ever use it because usually our pitchers were our best players.
Wasn't the, but there the were teams, the DHs in amateur ball, were a little different.
You could DH for anybody.
Anybody, yeah.
Yeah. And that was all. I also thought that was mean.
Yes.
Right? Like, he's going to play this kid, and he's not getting any at-bats.
Yeah, like in Little League, putting a guy in right field. Yeah. All right, well, we know why we did that, so.
Yeah, I'm sure there were a lot of kids who grew up in the only time they were ever going to have to hit. Well, I guess if they're a National League organization, they got to double A, they were going to have to do it.
Yeah.
But they were going to have to do it in high school, they were going to have to do it in college. And all of a sudden, it's like, ah, crap, I got a bat? I don't want to do that. I mean, I would have been the opposite. Because all I ever, the entire time I played baseball, the only thing I ever wanted to do was hit. So, yeah. You know, if you'd have told me you were DH'ing for me, I'd been like, screw you, I'm batting. And they're like, well, then you're not playing. What? But yeah, so now we've got this fancy new rule. And you never say never. There will, you know, there always can be some other guy who tears it up in both, and all of a sudden he's the next dual threat. But it's not. It's. I'm glad they're going to do it for Shohei, but it's. I think that really is kind of a rule for one guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously it pertains to it, but who else is going to do it?
Yeah,
like, well, Michael Lorenzen, isn't he also an Angel? So maybe
yes.
So Shohei's going to be DHing for Michael Lorenzen and pissing Michael Lorenzen off. I should be hitting. Like, no, you're not. You're good. You're okay, but you're not Shohei.
Lorenzen has said that they're going to put him in the outfield sometime, and it's the Angels, so they probably
will. Yeah, Joe
will
do it. You should just give all the dual threat guys to Joe, because they'll actually use him. Probably at crazy times when he shouldn't.
They talk about, you know, fomenting the next, or making it so there's more Shoheis in the future, whatever that means. But, I mean, you know, not to beat this dead horse, but... You know, like Greinke on the Royals, good hitter, you know, like a 300 slugging percentage.
Yeah.
You know, 110 ISO power, you know, and typical is 150 or 155. And Madison Bumgarner's got 19 home runs, but it took him like 700 plate appearances to get there. And he's not even, you know, it's like, does Zach Greinke really want Zach Greinke to hit for himself in a game to help him win?
No, he does not.
I mean, he wants to hit because it's fun, like you do.
Yep.
But is that going to make the Royals better? No.
No. The worst hitter on their bench is a far better option than the best hitting pitcher they have. So it's just not going to happen. Another rule that has gotten delayed is the, because we're going to start with 28 guys instead of 26 for the first, I believe it's all April. It was a little mushy as to when that was going to end, but I think they just decided to do it for the first month. Also means
May starts on May 2nd, and I've heard that as
okay. It also means then that they aren't going to enforce the, you can only have 13 pitchers on your roster. I don't know if you saw that Scott Service threw a fit that they were actually going to have that rule. And it's like, Scott, that's 8 guys in a bullpen. You can't get by with 8 guys in your bullpen.
It's my safety net.
It just so happened to be then that on Remember This Crap last week, we spun the wheel, landed on 1980. I don't know if you're familiar with that podcast, but on that podcast, Mike Donahue and I, we have a wheel that has every Cub team from 1980 to 2011. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the broadcast, at the beginning of the podcast, I hit the thing, the wheel spins, it lands on a year, and we just have to talk about it. I've often said, it's not Research This Crap, it's Remember This Crap.
Right.
And we just try to remember things that happened in that season and with players and whatever. And it just so happened, I had just been talking to somebody else about that Scott Service quote, and that we landed on the 1980 Cubs. And for the entire season, the 1980 Cubs used 12 pitchers.
Yeah.
They had a 4-man rotation and probably a 6-man bullpen.
Yes.
And they ended up using 2 other guys all year. It's for the kids at home. That doesn't mean they had 12 pitchers on their staff at all times. They only used 12 guys total in the entire season. Scott Service's poor little head would have exploded.
Two of them were Lynn McLaughlin.
I think Lynn made... I think Rushel made 40 starts. Mike Kruko, I think, made 40.
Sounds right.
I think McLaughlin made like 34 starts and had like 15 or 16 relief appearances. And I don't remember. I don't know if that was the year that Lynn got hit in the forehead with a line drive and stayed in the game. I don't know.
Hmm.
He took one right between the eyes and just pulled the ball out of his forehead and got back on the... Got back on the rubber and threw the next pitch. Like, nah, I'm fine. Yeah. Yeah, things have changed a little bit. I even heard on, I don't know who was doing the play-by-play of the Dodger game tonight, but him and Rick Monday were complaining about the new rule that you can only option a guy five times.
Right.
And they were like, well, is this going to work? And they listed two pitchers last year that the Dodgers optioned nine times. And I'm sitting in here going, they're not going to do that, Rick. That's what's gonna happen. He's like, well, it's only a 40-man roster, and you got 26 guys. That only gives you 14 extra guys. And what are you going to do? It's like, you shuttle those guys by choice, not because you have to. And now you're just not going to be able to do it as much. You still, I mean, that's five's a lot. It really is.
Yeah.
And then there's also a new rule about if you waive a player, then you can't reclaim that player if he gets waived until it's gone through the entire league. And they had the example, I don't remember, you'll probably know this guy. There was a guy who kept getting shuttled back and forth between the Mariners and the Brewers last year.
Yeah, Jacob Nottingham.
Yeah, one would waive him, the other team would claim him. And then they'd have to waive him, and he'd go back. And he never had to make it all the way through waivers. The Mariners could keep grabbing him, or the Brewers, and now they've changed that. You got to let other teams with more wins than you get a crack at him.
Yes.
You don't just automatically get to claim him again. So just weird stuff like that. The team I think that will be most affected by the rule changes, the Rays will, but are the Brewers. Because nobody loves to shuttle guys between AAA and their bullpen, quite like Craig Counsell and the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah.
So if it screws them, I'm all for it.
Right.
So I'm happy. The Cubs could never, even the brilliance of Theo, could never quite figure that out.
Hmm.
The Cubs, for the longest time, and they still do it, it's like they didn't remember there was an injured list.
Yeah.
And then when the injured list got cut down to 10 days, they still would forget it. Like, Javi was like day-to-day with a heel injury for like a month.
Drives you crazy.
And it's like, we couldn't have just put him on the deal. How about retroactively now? You could bring him back tomorrow. You know, we're not going to DL him? No, that's great. And it turned out he had like a broken bone in his foot or whatever. They just couldn't see it on the scan. It's like, oh, for Christ's sakes. Some teams are just not as savvy as others are. A player I want to ask you about is a guy in your neck of the woods. is the Bobby Witt the Lesser. The younger Bobby Witt. Who I'm sure you've seen because the whole world has seen. He hit a homer in spring training yesterday, I think.
Yes.
And somebody put side by side his swing with Mike Trout's swing. And other than Trout having a higher leg kick, it looks exactly the same. Which clearly means he's the next Mike Trout. Because if your swing looks like the other guy, you've got it. But he is apparently like far and away the best prospect in baseball.
Well, he's some people might say Julio Rodriguez with the Mariners, okay. But I think Witt is closer. He was, if we hadn't had the pandemic, he might have been up already because he lost some time. He's just one of those guys that, I think Mike Trout is, that's high praise. I think I don't think he's going to have as high a batting average as Mike Trout. He doesn't have as good of a batting eye. I think, he's not going to walk as much. He's going to strike out a little more. So the stroke, sure. But, and the sound, I know I wrote yesterday, commented on the sound that that home run made. And it was just amazing. It was like, I said, it was like the Foley artists who knock the T-bones together in a boxing movie to simulate flesh hitting a boxing glove. It was just a obscene crazy sound and the screaming, the orgasmic screaming from the dugout of the teammates go, oh, you know, they were fanboying it up. And so, you know, with some limitations, he looks great. I think I bet he could even throw more strikes than Bobby Witt, his dad, when he was pitching. So
are any of his limitations having Mike Matheny as his manager?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I'm sure Mike's learned some lessons over the years, but you know, it's good.
That is going to be mostly in commercial real estate. That was that's what Mike learned the lessons in.
Yes. Well, hopefully.
Yeah. Not every strip ball is a gold mine, Mike. Sorry.
It's been a great time these past 15 years or so for some real estate, but not all. So, and he hasn't always had the best luck, but he's going to play third base. He's, you know, I guess he's a natural shortstop, but he's kind of a big dude, and it's exciting to have him come into Kansas City. They need the help.
Do you think he's a better all around player, shortstop, than Andrelton Simmons?
Andrelton can still go get the ball.
Okay,
I think his numbers are good there. Right. But yeah, I would say if you put him at short, you'd have better results team wise in the long run.
Somebody,
you know, Andrelton's Jed. Yeah, you know, I still think Andrelton can play. He can pick it, but like we said last week, you know, he had that peak a little bit with the Angels, and then he's coming down the other side of the mountain with the hitting. So,
well, if he only plays the games when Nico Horner is injured, he'll only play in like 152 games this year. So
he didn't get hurt tonight, did he, Nico?
No, I'm sure he's saving the quad strain for his first at bat of the regular season.
Right.
Yeah.
So
they'll give him, that way he can go a third consecutive season without a home run. It'll be great. The star-studded Cub team. I don't know if you saw this, but they signed Jonathan Villar.
They did
too. So he apparently is Patrick Wisdom insurance, because everybody should have Patrick Wisdom insurance.
I think Ian Happ sells that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
On the sides.
Yeah, with the hair plugs and the coffee, and the T-shirts and the podcast. And
yeah, Patrick, like you said last week, I think he's a pretty good player. You know, he's got other skills other than hitting. He can play defense at third base.
Yep.
So, you know, we like in an Andrelton Simmons sort of way, we can appreciate that part of his game.
He's handsome. The women like Patrick Wisdom.
He's got a really cool name.
Yeah, well, he's got a cool nickname, P Wiz. We gave him that.
Not a lot of wisdom.
I can't take full credit for that. Andrew Cieslak, he came up with P Wiz. I just promoted it.
P Wiz, that's good. I'm warming to it, sort of, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. You can feel it. There's a warmth going down your leg at the moment.
Started as a trickle, but now
it is P Wiz. Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, if you just cut the strikeouts down, it'd be a star. It's like, oh, well, he strikes out 65% of the time. I don't know.
That's too many.
I don't know the likelihood that we're going to be cutting those strikeouts down.
It is Jonathan Villar is a good, you know, he's a guy that you want playing a couple days a week in two or three positions, and I like that move.
Yes. Now, it's not, is it short for some, is it virtual reality?
I was going to make that joke, and I'm like, don't make that joke, please.
No, don't worry. Just wait a second. Andy will make that joke.
Yeah,
that'll
right.
Be better. Just let him walk right
into
that.
I admit that it popped into my head to say Jonathan VR or Jonathan Virtual Reality. But
I could see the Cubs subbing him into the first game at third base with the goggles on. Ball hit right at him and just brains him. Apparently there's a lag. I didn't know
this
it was coming.
Photoshop.
I don't know if you saw this. The Cubs, sometimes they make it too easy. They have a slogan, the official slogan of the team this year. It's this Boog's
over here.
Fault.
What is it?
It's just different here.
It's just different here, right?
Yeah, it certainly is. It's actually Boog's fault. He said that in his introductory press conference last year. And it's not the first time that the Cubs have just taken a line from a press conference. There, Theo gave his whole "baseball is better" speech at his introductory, and they tried to make that a thing, and then they tried "That's Cub." Theo was big on trying to make "That's Cub" be an actual, like, become shorthand for excellence.
Right.
You know, like, well, the guy, you know, hitter goes the other way with two strikes, gets a big hit, that's Cub. When in reality, we know what that's Cub is. You know, guy runs headlong into the tarp. That's Cub. He gets lost in the ivy. Now that's Cub. It gives up a grand slam, like why am I blanking on who's the he pitched with Dempster for the Rangers. They both did horrible Harry Carey impressions. It's a left-hander.
Derek Holland.
Gave up with a 3-run lead, gave up a grand slam to Bryce Harper, a walk-off grand slam to Bryce Harper in Philly.
Yeah.
That's Cub. That's what that's Cub. No matter what you did, that's what's gonna stick. And then it's just different here. They're just asking for it.
So Boog said that. It sounds Boone more like
said, he said it's just different.
More like Tom.
And it took him a year. It was a delayed reaction. And they're like, hey, we need a slogan.
They got a workshop.
What the big redheaded guy say? Let's go with that. That beats having to pay an ad agency to come up with it. We'll just steal one from our own broadcaster. It's just different here. It sure is. That one of my frustrations, and I have a lot of frustrations, was the Cubs are busy stockpiling veteran relief pitchers, veteran pitchers.
Yeah.
It's very clear, with an eye on flipping them in July and getting more prospects. I don't know what kind of prospects you're getting for these guys, but they'll hit lightning in a bottle. I mean, they did once get Pedro Strop and Jake Arrieta for Scott Feldman. So, you know, stuff can happen.
Right.
And Steve Clevenger, of course. I'm sure he was the key part of that. But they don't seem to have the foresight to do that with, like, position players. Hmm. And that my frustration was, couldn't we have found somebody who could play center field? Even if all they can do is defensively, they can handle it. And then maybe that's a guy that you could flip. I mean, they kind of actually did it last year with Jake Marisnyk. At least they had a guy who could handle it defensively. Of course, he was always hurt, so he never didn't get to do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're bringing it back. They brought Drew Smyly back. They finally get to see Drew Smyly pitch. They let him rehab for a year, and then they had to let him go so they could afford Cole Hamels' contract option year. That was a good sign for the financial resources of the club. They get Chris Martin.
Yep.
Steven Bro. I guess it's Brawl, but I like Bro. They had to move him to a minor league deal because he's got a bum flipper. So that's a good sign right away.
The one he uses to throw?
Bring all these guys in. They just officially signed Michael Givens today, even though he apparently had promised to come like 2 weeks ago. He's probably the closest thing they actually have to a closer. It could be very bad.
But your complaint, I want to address that. I think that's one of my complaints about teams sort of like the Cubs, but really more teams like the Orioles and the Indians or the Guardians at the bottom who don't sign anybody.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't you sign somebody that we've heard of, you know, to not only spend your money, and to make the team better for now, but to flip later? You know, if you don't want to do it from the standpoint of, well, we're not going to win the World Series this year, so we don't give a crap, whatever. But, okay, talking a language you do understand, you know, why don't you sign Jock Peterson's or whatever to fill out your outfield and, you know, pay him something so the team does look a little better and then you can flip them later. I don't understand why they don't do that.
No. No, and that was supposedly what was actually going to – that was what all of the things in the new CBA were going to encourage that. Like, it doesn't do you any good to lose.
But you didn't believe that.
I didn't believe it. No. Their whole thing about, well, it doesn't do you any good to lose 108 games because you might end up picking fourth. So why don't you try to win? Here's a novel idea. Why don't you try to win 70 games this year?
Oh, boy. Because
you still might pick first. And they're like, okay, but we'd have to pay those guys. We don't want to do that. So you already, you know, they're like, you know, the evil Dolans in Cleveland are like the ones with all the money. They're like, oh, no. We already had to give a raise to all the minimum salary guys that we got. That's where our money went.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you had to give them all an extra $20,000. I don't think you went broke. Yeah, there was just a thing today about there were a couple of Cubs that had to get their contracts torn up and get new ones because they had signed before the lockout for less than the minimum salary. So the Cubs had to go, apparently we're going to have to pay you more than this.
Yeah, well, they probably went to, but hey, guys, good news. You know, you're getting paid the correct minimum wage now. How do you feel about that?
Do you make a lot of money, Jake? Or I hear baseball players make a lot of money, Jake. Oh, it depends on how good you are. Well, how good are you? I make the league minimum. Yeah, that's that would, especially if you're not a first year player, and right. You show up for spring training and they have to tear up your contract because you and your agent did such a good job that you actually came in at below what the league minimum was. And I'm sure the Cubs are like, yeah, you're not seeing any of this. You're going, you could sign this, but that doesn't mean you're not going to Des Moines. Cubs brought Robel Garcia back. And I just assumed it was because he probably still has, he can't get out of his lease on his condo in Des Moines. He's like, I'll just go back to the Cubs. It'll be cheaper. I'm already paying on that damn thing. I'll just go play there. Baseball. It's the greatest. So, we've got what? Just 2 weeks, right? Before opening day?
It's 2 weeks from tomorrow, Thursday.
It's barreling right down on us. Yeah, it'll be exciting, I guess, for some teams. It will be nice to see real baseball again. I was happy to see. It's nice to have spring training games on kind of in the background because it's baseball.
Yeah.
But it's still not baseball. It's baseball. But it's like, I don't know who any, even for the Cubs, I don't know who any of these people are. I'm not going to get attached. They're not, you know. I'll wait until the real guys start. And then somebody had to remind me, no, these are the Cubs. This is all that's left. Like, wait a minute, what? It's nice when, apparently Wilson Contreras had told Miguel Amaya that he better get healthy because he's going to be the catcher pretty soon.
I saw that.
Yeah, they're getting rid of me, so you're going to want to hurry up from Tommy John disease and start playing again. Yeah, it's I think the Cubs are down to three guys, right? That are left from the World Series team. I think we're down to Contreras, Hayward, and Hendricks.
Right.
I think that's it.
I think that is.
And it's Kyle's the only one they re-signed.
Hap was the year after, right?
Yeah, Hap came up the year after.
Yeah.
So Kyle's probably got to be like, why did I stay? I clearly could have got a better deal somewhere. But that's the retrofitting is not the right word, but now it's look, the Cubs offered all these guys more money than they got out on the open market.
Yeah.
So clearly all those guys screwed up. It's like, okay, well, clearly those guys wanted to go too.
Mm.
Right? Like something happened where they were like, eh. And the other thing is when you're negotiating with your own players, you might end up paying them more than their market value to keep them off the market. I don't think you get to walk around with a badge of honor Well, that contract was actually a little bit more than they signed for. Well, you don't have him anymore. So what did that accomplish? You felt like, if you felt like offering Chris Bryant $200 million in 2017 was the best you could possibly do, even though, and he said, well, he signed for 182, so that's less. Well, yeah, but you also were going to buy out like three arbitration years. So you would have needed to have really paid him like 240 to equal what he ended up making.
And you, yeah,
you don't get to brag about it, because if you were willing to pay him $200 million, you wanted to keep him, and you just refused to go to a number where you could keep him. So congratulations. Nice job.
And you brought up a good point about how, well, you know, they didn't like how things were going in other ways, and they wanted to leave, and the organization isn't all you guys think it's cracked up to be. And, you know, maybe that is something that should be addressed.
It's just, on the inside. It's just different here. Yeah.
It says on the pocket schedule.
I mean, Rizzo was pretty open about how he wanted to stay. He loved playing for the Cubs. That was great. But he had a number that they were going to have to get to, and they refused to get to it. And he's like, well, then I want to stay, but I'm not just staying for your price, you know. And I get it. I mean, with any athlete, you're either paying for what they've already done or what you think they're going to do. You're never really paying for what – it's very rare when you find that middle spot where you're paying that guy exactly what he's worth. You're either projecting a young player and hoping you're not overpaying him, or you're bringing in a veteran who you're paying him that much because his track record demands that much money. I get that. But at some point, if you're going to have a good team, you got to pay somebody. And Cubs don't seem to want to pay anybody.
Yeah, you're right. If you want to have a good team, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, people can be apologists for all this and go, well, you know, if you crunch the numbers, you look at this. It's like their job is to try to find as many good players as you can. If you're a GM, that's what your job is. I mean, that's a lesson that the 2016 Cubs apparently didn't learn from themselves. Part of the reason that team was so good is they didn't have any bad players on it. Like, they just literally had a really good, really deep team. They lost guys during the season. I mean, Kyle Schwarber, on the third day of the season, tears his knee into shreds. And they were able to get through that, even with their right fielder never getting a hit. They were good enough. Actually, I should say, at that point, one of the other misunderstood things about the 2016 Cubs is that they played incredible defense.
Yeah.
And Hayward was a huge part of that. Even as much as you can be in an outfield, he was the best defensive right fielder. So he had value. And then it just seemed like they were like, well, okay, well, we don't need, you know, that thing all those things we were really good at, that we won the World Series. Hey, we don't really need to do that, because that's going to get more expensive. So we'll just find a different way to do it. And then you never get back. And, you know, to go from that roster 6 years later to the one they have, it's like, how the hell did you do this? How did you screw this up that much that fast?
They did. I mean, I don't know how things would have been different if they had better fortune in the playoffs one more time and won one more championship. Maybe. I don't know. But it did always seem, even after the first championship, even with the good teams that they had in the immediate years after, that there were corners cut, that there were, you know, that they didn't go quite all out. And it, like you said, it came around and bit him in the butt. But I do wonder, I don't know, would we feel better about it had they gotten more out of that nucleus that they had and won one more World Series?
Obviously that would have helped. But you would think with that team they had, you know, after 2015 and after 2016, they only won one other playoff series ever.
Yeah.
And it was that freakish one against the Nationals that we talked about last week with the Max Scherzer's inning from hell. And I think that's the thing that leaves Cub fans the most disappointed, is there was no like prolonged run, even of like heartbreaking. Oh, remember that NLCS that we lost? I mean, like the Cardinals, who would just detest, they have this long run of just getting kicked in the stomach, you know, Travis Ishikawa, and you know, they make the World Series against the Red Sox, and they have to bear the brunt of they're the team that got swept and all that stuff. The Cubs didn't even really do that. They 2015 was a lot of fun. They were overmatched in the NLCS against the Mets pitching. They win the World Series in 2016. They win a series in 2017, but they were completely outclassed by the Dodgers. The next year, they get completely outclassed by the Dodgers. Oh, no. Then the next year, they have the horrible – they have one of the best teams in baseball, and then they just – their offense just disappears at the end. Yeah. And they end up having to play a game 163 against the Brewers and lose it. And then they had to – they played the Rockies and lost to the freaking Rockies in 14 innings in a wild card game. And that was it. That's where it ended. I mean, yes, they got to the playoffs in 2020 against the Marlins and scored one run in two games. But I mean, that's the thing that's so, like, unsatisfying about it was, like, if you'd have told us, you're only going to win one World Series, but you're going to have this core of players, we're going to have a lot, we're going to have some cool October wins, right, even outside of that year. And we really, other than, we don't have very many. I think that's the thing that left Cub fans completely, like, you know, is that all there is? For all that, that's all we got? So, but you're right, they... A lot of it had to do with, well, there were two big things that Theo's plan was draft the college offensive players high, guys who could get to the big leagues relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And we'll sign veteran pitching. And then we get that in place, and then we're going to start drafting all these young pitchers. And as our young core of position players start to get expensive, we will have all this cheap pitching that'll slide in behind him. And they went years and they didn't develop a single starting pitcher.
No.
And they couldn't even, those draft picks, they didn't even get, like, Dwayne Underwood was like the best relief pitcher they developed for a while. It's right. And they couldn't develop anybody. They struck out on every single guy. And then they were having to then pay for pitching. They had to go get Cole Hamels and then they had to pick up his option. And they were all of a sudden spending money in spots that they didn't intend to spend it on. And then there's the famous case of they sign Yu Darvish to a deal that was considered a bargain at the time. And Theo was all excited about it. And at Yu's press conference said, this was a price that was just too good to pass up. Yu's an impact pitcher. And now we'll have money because we spent less than we thought we were going to. We're going to have money to spend on other positions. And then the Ricketts took the money away.
Right.
So they clearly changed Theo's plan on him during the middle of what was supposed to be their run.
Right.
And that's completely self-inflicted. So, that's fun. But now, everything's fine because we have Frank Schwindel.
It's different here now.
And Patrick was thinking, it's different here. It sure is. But, you know, they... You know, the Wilson was kind of like the last guy standing at the trade deadline last year. And I think the general assumption was, okay, well, that must be the one guy, you know, they're going to keep. And it's just a few months later, it's very clear they have no intention of keeping him.
Right.
None. He can't get them to offer him a multi-year contract. I said, well, why don't you trade him right now then? You're going to take your catcher into the season and hope you're going to trade him? And he gets hurt because he's a catcher, and he gets hurt, and then you get nothing for him, and then he leaves. So, I don't
catching
understand.
Catching is a weird market. They're probably figuring that some contender will have their catcher get hurt, and I don't know, maybe the Yankees because they have kind of weak catchers right now. I don't know, but
there's Yankee fans and Padre fans are both cooking up all kinds of fun trade rumors for Wilson, and they're all just like one guy suggested he even made a graphic because he knew he was serious. And the Cubs were going to get, see if you go for this trade. Here's what the Cubs were going to get for Wilson Contreras. They were going to get Eric Hosmer and Will Myers and Victor Caratini. How could you turn that down? Oh my God, that's great. It's like, buddy, you don't seem to understand that the Padres are trying to package Myers or Hosmer with a prospect just to get somebody to take him.
Right.
You don't get to trade that for Wilson Contreras. Sorry.
No.
I don't know. Maybe the Cubs will trade Wilson to the Yankees and get Glaber back. Mm. And atone for that, you know. We never got to see Glaber. Instead, we had to have a role this and we had to win a World Series.
Well, if he hits like he did last year, we don't want to see Glaber.
No. That's why I'm sure he's imminently available.
Right. Although, if that was just a fluke, although the last couple of years he's been down a little bit. He starts hitting again, he'll be a fair-haired kid. So, because they need it. They, as much as money as the Yankees spend and don't go the nth degree anymore. You know, I know they're the third whatever payroll, but you know, if Glaber doesn't hit, and I forget who else is not hitting anymore in that lineup, but you know, they're gonna, you know, they're gonna finish third or fourth.
There's nothing that wrong with Glaber that a couple of series with the Orioles won't fix. We got six games coming up in the next 2 weeks with the Orioles, Glaber. I'm sure you'll hit 12 home runs and everything will be fine. And he had 18 home runs against them 1 year. Some just ridiculous number.
Something like that. Hitting the grand slam in every series and two in a game. And
yeah, and it's not like the Orioles got good, and that's why he stopped hitting them.
No.
That didn't happen. All right. Well, I think we've we hit on everything I wanted to talk about. And that's really the most important thing.
It is.
Is that we talked about the things that I want to talk about.
I wanted to talk about some of those things, too.
Okay, good. I'm glad. All right, so I appreciate it. So Dave, people can find your fine work at BallySports.com.
Yes, yes.
And on the Twitters, at AnswerDave.
AnswerDave.
All right.
Give me a follow, please.
Well, it's good to talk to you again, and we'll have to do this again sometime soon.
Thanks, Andy.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us have herpes.
Are you a sicko?